Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Last winter, the future looked bleak for Hampshire College. Then President Miriam Nelson had announced that the school was not going to be accepting a freshman class, and the best case scenario for the school's survival seemed to be some sort of merger with a larger college or university. Since then, Hampshire has raised new money and kept its academic accreditation. Ed Wingenbach, Hampshire's new president, stopped by our studio recently with an update.
First of all, I think Hampshire is much more stable than people think it was coming out of last spring. As has been confirmed by our recent accreditation decision, we have a clear plan for financial sustainability. We are currently fiscally sustainable. We're not facing any immediate crisis at this point. For me, Hampshire College is the most important educational institution in America because it's the place that is charged by its mission to create the next iteration of what higher education should be. It was founded in the 1970 by the five colleges, specifically with the mission to invent and transform higher education, and has done so really successfully.
So you've redone your curriculum just in the last couple of months. So what are you saying higher education should look like right now?
If you imagine what skills students need to be prepared for the world that they face, a world that's full of unknown and ambiguous challenges, where the jobs that they will have 10 years from now don't exist and you can't imagine them, where they have to be able to organize themselves and grapple with big questions, you would not organize college the way most places do, right? You wouldn't think about it in terms of majors and sort of miniature versions of graduate programs. You would ask students to do exactly the sort of thing that they're going to do when they leave college. So what we do at Hampshire College is invite students to work on questions or projects across 4 years that do not have disciplinary limitations, where you come to us with a question that you want to pursue about the world or about how to change it, and you draw from all of the various disciplines and programs that are available at the college and in the five colleges broadly to articulate what that is. And
is that how it's going to work for students when they come out and they come into the workforce, though? I mean, if you are in programming, you actually are going to work in a disciplinary, restricted environment. You're not going to have access to your whole workplace. That's just one example. So how do these skills translate over in a more contained environment, which is what many students will have when they graduate?
Right. Well, I think there are two different kinds of jobs that students prepare for. There's a kind of vocational and very clearly defined jobs. You know, programming might be one of those, some engineering, right? There are places like that. And if you know exactly what you want to do, then you should go train for that. But I think most people who choose to go to a liberal arts education do so with the understanding that they will have many careers over time, and that what they want out of that education is the development of the entrepreneurial skills and the ability to ask important, unthought-of questions, gather resources, put together teams of people, and pursue those projects independently. And that's at the core of what a Hampshire education gives you.
So that's a new curriculum model. It would not be new to you to hear that there are those who are calling into question the overall liberal arts college model, that sort of $50,000 tuition in a four-year institution in a self-contained campus where you live there 9 months out of the year, where tuition is escalating and you both have to rely on that tuition, 87% of your revenue comes from tuition, but also have to discount it so that families can afford it, is eventually going to become a math problem that doesn't work anymore. How do you think about that? You are sort of the standard bearer for the smaller liberal arts institution, at least in New England, if not nationally.
Right. So the two things I'd say really quickly about that. The first is that that's not a new problem. Hampshire, when it was founded, one of its charges, apart from inventing the new curriculum of higher education, was to demonstrate that it was possible to offer a rigorous liberal arts education relying primarily on tuition. In our case, we assume that the cost of education for us will continue to be stable or go down because we provide access to a lot of students.
I really want to check this because I know that there are potentially parents and students thinking about applying. You said it's important for costs to go down. I haven't heard anywhere that tuition is going down for students year over year to get a college education. So how are you
right.
making
so this
costs
is, this
go
is
down?
Like, this is like the airlines, right? So tuition versus cost. cost for private colleges nationally has declined about 1.5% a year every year. What a student pays.
What a student
tuition,
actually pays.
Yeah, tuition, room, board, books, those sorts of things. The National Association of College Business Officers does a survey of this every year of all of the private colleges and what students actually pay to attend. And that's been, from the point of view of the colleges, it's been an ongoing problem, the problem you're identifying here, which is that the cost has continued to go down, even though tuition, which is, you know, again, it's kind of like an airline ticket, tuition goes up, costs stay relatively stable or they go down. And then you've got to, as a college, your costs are probably going up. And so you've got to figure out how to square that circle.
You know, the National Association of College and University Business Officers says that the tuition discount rate, so this is what we take off of what we say you're supposed to pay, that you do actually pay, is near 50% for the first time. Is that sustainable? If the costs of the university are going up, but we discount for students what they pay on average to 50% of what a full price student would pay, and the top tier colleges, we had an author, Paul Tuff, on recently, who talked about sort of the giant sucking sound of the very top tier colleges trying to grab as many of the students who can pay full price as possible. Hey, not everybody's going to make that math problem work. They're just not.
Yeah.
How's Hampshire going to make that math problem work?
Right. Well, Hampshire already makes that problem work.
Explain
that. Coming out of last spring, we adjusted our budget and our expenses in really creative ways, in part by turning to our staff, our faculty, our alums, and saying, you know, in the way that we do at Hampshire, here's a problem. Let's work together to solve it. We now have a budget that, had we taken a class coming out of last spring, we would be producing positive revenue.
Right? So then why was Hampshire close to merging in order to stay alive, and with students sitting into the president's office for 60 days back in the spring?
I think there were real concerns of previous leadership about the trend line, where if you see over the course of several years, you're spending more money and your revenue is going down, and that projects out into the future. Both of those lines look the wrong direction. If you don't think you can control your expenses and you don't think you can raise enough money to make up that gap, then it would have been the right thing to do to try to do something like merge. It turns out that both of those assumptions are wrong, right? We've been able very clearly and effectively to control our costs without undermining our educational effectiveness. And our alumni and other people and parents and other people who care about Hampshire poured out with support financially. And so we've raised, since January of this year, we've raised $11.2 million to support the college.
So here actually is Ken Burns. We talked to him last May. He's an alum. When it looked like Hampshire was in some pretty serious crisis, he took over as co-head of the development effort. Here's what he said.
I identified for myself a figure that really hurt, a contribution that would really hurt, and then I multiplied it by four. And I've reached out to the Hampshire community and asked them to do the same. If you can give $1,000, give $4,000. If you can give $250,000, give $1 million.
That's a lot of pain for alumni. Would a five-year chunk, is there a bolus that an institution like Hampshire needs? And if you can get that bolus and then make some changes, you can stabilize? Or will you need alumni to be thinking, man, $1,000 hurts and I got to give four for the rest of the institution's life?
So 2 points about that. We just launched a campaign last week. Ken is the co-chair of that along with several other people. The campaign is for $60 million over 5 years. So we're raising that money to make up the gap between not having taken a class this year, which costs some revenue.
13 incoming students for this current year versus a standard class of 300?
350, right. And so over the course of the next 4 years, when we return to full enrollment, at our current budget levels, we will have a balanced budget. Actually, we'll be producing positive revenue. But to get from here to there, we have a hole to fill. Once we get to the next 4 years out, if we can continue to raise money, it will be to build other opportunities for our students on top of our core operations. Right now, we just need to get from here to there.
There's some data that suggests that I think I laugh out of the irony of it, not because it's funny. I think the term that's been used is the coming apocalypse in 2026, where it seems like the demographics of college age young people will just tank in most regions of the country. So that business model you just talked about, or that financial model, is predicated on keeping that 300-person enrollment. Are you worried? Are you worried about this apocalypse of shrinking demand right at the moment that higher education institutions, these liberal arts colleges, need to be able to keep people in the seats?
I'm not for Hampshire. I'm worried for it generally. Hampshire's in the lucky position is that we have a national reputation. We recruit from California, from the Pacific Northwest, from Florida, from the South, internationally. So our pool of students is much broader and deeper than just New England. And this is, you know, you'll go back to talking to college presidents of small colleges. What they're all concerned about between now and 2026 is how do we identify the clear spot for us in the market where we can attract 400 or 500 students out of all of the 18-year-olds that are out there who want to come to us. And in some ways, for liberal arts colleges, this is actually an easier math problem. Just about 3% of traditionally aged college students go to liberal arts colleges. If 4% went to liberal arts colleges, every liberal arts college in the country would be fine, right? So the denominator is different here. If we can just move it a little bit, even of a shrinking pool of students, liberal arts colleges can survive. If they're willing to figure out what they do well, what their niche is, and invest their resources to support that, the ones that do that are going to be fine.
All right, before we go, I do want to spend just a minute talking about equity. It may be counterintuitive to some of our listeners to know that actually one might be more likely to get an attractive financial aid package as a low-income student or maybe a first-generation student from a private liberal arts institution than from a state school.
That's absolutely true. So, in fact, we have more moderate and low-income students at at Hampshire College than any of the other schools that we're consortium with, including UMass Amherst, and by a significant amount.
And so that creates an equity imperative. Mm-hmm. That liberal arts institutions like yours figure this out.
Yes.
We know we need our young people of color, our low to moderate income families, our first generation college goers to go. So do you feel a burden of equity in solving this problem for Hampshire College as well?
Yeah, I think it is the essential question for private higher education. I think it's a bifurcated question that there are places that have immense resources that could make a very quick difference should they choose to do so.
And you're talking about top-tier institutions?
Yeah, I will just give you an example of one of the places that I think should be a model for how we think about private liberal education. One is Hampshire because of the way we do the curriculum. The other for me is Berea College in Kentucky, which has a $1.6 billion endowment, but they spend all of it on student support. So they only admit low-income students. No one there pays tuition. And if you visit Berea College, it doesn't feel like a place that has $1.6 billion, but they're doing an immense amount of good for the world, right? On the other side is the majority of small private colleges that are in situations similar to Hampshire, where our revenue comes from our students. And in our case, what we need to do and what we've been doing is try to match the resources that those students, particularly first-generation students, lower-income students, students from ethnic and racial minorities, need to be supportive and then make sure that they don't have to borrow an excessive amount of money in order to graduate. I think that is a good model for how this works. And so our typical graduate leaves Hampshire College with a roughly $25,000 in debt, right? It's the price of a used pickup truck. Well, for an investment that is likely to pay off with, you know, $1 million or more in added income over the course of your life, that's a pretty good investment.
That's Hampshire College President Ed Wingenbach. Stay with us. Coming up, during the holidays, supporting yourself or someone you love who has an eating disorder. We'll talk about it and take your calls next at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.